Thanks for joining us. You're listening to the Sprocket Podcast.
Hey folks, it's Brock with the Sprocket Podcast. Hope things are going well with you. I am in Boston, Massachusetts. I'm actually in Medford, Massachusetts, but very close to Boston. And I had a great trip with Jeremy from CriticalTransit.com. Today we went down to Providence, Rhode Island and rode our bikes along the waterfront down to Bristol, Rhode Island. So anyways, we captured some chat on the commuter rail on the way back, so I'll give you some of that. And then after that we have Breakfast on the Bridges, 10 years, it's the anniversary. And Steph Ralph was kind enough to record some of that for us. So we will share some of that with you. Also wanted to be sure to mention that while I do my best to get audio quality and do it right, I think my iPhone was really full of other data, and so the recording was kind of patchy. I tried to present to you with the least authorial intrusion possible, but you'll hear my voice here in my guest room, stepping in a couple times just to let you know what bits you might have missed when the audio recorder failed. So anyways, happy holidays, everybody. Happy New Year. Happy 2013. And we will see you next week with more live show. All right. Talk to you soon. Bye.
I
appreciate it.
I eventually eat the box.
It smells good. It's like berry cereal.
Yeah,
it's
yeah.
Wow.
Sugar, butter, sugar.
I like that.
Welcome to the Sprocket Podcast. This is Brock and guest co-host Jeremy Mendelson.
Hey, folks. How's it going? We are on the commuter rail train heading back from Providence into Boston.
That we are. And we just left Providence very recently, so we have like a whole hour to talk and think about nothing in general. So it's been a good day, though. We met up on bikes in Davis Square and rode to the train station and then commuter rail down to Providence. We didn't really do anything in Providence. Like, we got lost, I guess. It was, yeah.
And yeah, we had a lot of fun, though. We, you know, we were riding around and, you know, just we got a little lost trying to find the bike path. We eventually found it. We rode down to Bristol. It was a little cold, but we had fun. Met up with some random people and, you know, see some signs of life down there.
They had lived in Bristol for some time, but they were at Dunkin' Donuts and had extra chairs at their table when the whole place was full. So we sat and talked to them for a while.
Yeah, everybody was really friendly, and, you know, it was just, everybody was, you know, giving us a table, and, you know, we took our bikes on the bus back, the good old Rip the Bus back to Providence.
It's Rhode Island.
Public Transit Authority,
yes, thank you. And it cost us $2 to get back what it cost us, what, X number of calories in bicycling, but couldn't have picked a better day for it, because it's been, like, pretty shitty weather, really, in the past couple days.
Yeah, it's been pretty awful. It's pretty cold, and I remember I only did that bike path once before, and it was just, you know, miserable rain.
That's right, because you said it was raining, but it was warmer.
It was warmer, but it was raining. It was not pouring, but it was raining, like, just enough to really be annoying, and just, yeah. But terrible stuff to bike in. Today we had better luck.
Seriously, it was cold, but, like, extra layers, wool socks and all that. And that was what? It was when we stopped at Shaw's to buy some groceries and eat. The lady that bumped into us on our way out was like, "How are you bicycling in this cold weather?" And, I mean, it's really not all that cold when you're in motion, I guess.
Yeah, it's funny how people who don't bike a lot, they, you know, seem to be really worried about biking in the cold. And it's, you know, I get that all the time, like, no matter where I'm biking. But especially in the smaller cities, the more suburban places, it's sort of like, you know, you show up on a bicycle, it's sort of amazing to them to begin with. And then, and the fact that it's cold outside, it's like, oh my God.
Seriously. I mean, I had times when I was younger where, like, I hadn't discovered wool yet, so I was wearing cotton socks and, like, you know, not open-toed shoes, but, like, sneakers with just, like, thin fabric over the top of your foot, and it got wet. And those were bad days, I think, for bicycling in Portland for me. But I got smarter, and now I generally stay pretty warm. Yeah. But you're fighting with temperatures on the East Coast of, like, they're far lower generally and far more severe.
Yeah. I mean it gets pretty cold at 0 Fahrenheit here sometimes in Boston, but I mean, that's pretty rare. Usually it's like 10.
Yeah. I remember I had 8, I think, when I was here in 2008-2009, and that was intense. Like, I'd never experienced weather that cold before. I don't think I ever want to again.
Yeah, but so you just get rain and miserable rain. And I guess the plus side of a Boston winter is that it doesn't rain very much. The past couple of days are a little bit of an exception, but usually it's cold enough that it doesn't rain.
Yeah, we
I like it.
Just freeze the water in the air.
Yeah.
Works out all right.
Yeah. What are we doing tonight?
I don't know. I have no idea. I'm tired.
Yeah.
I'm ready to like fall asleep on the train or something.
Yeah. Go ride the Charles River on 20 miles.
That's true. Yeah. How far out have you been on that? Has it been like...
Oh, I've done the whole thing.
Okay.
Yeah.
How far does it go?
It goes out... I think the loop is about 20 miles. Yeah, on both sides.
Okay.
But there's... It's really nice out. If you go past Watertown Square, which is kind of the end of the, you know, the really busy urban areas. Yeah, once you get out of Cambridge and Brighton, it's like... It gets much more suburban setting. But the path keeps going. And then once you get past Watertown Square, it gets like really wooded and... There are parts that are dirt, and you know, there's some wood boardwalk sections and like, a couple of nice bridges and waterfalls. And it's really cool out there. I love riding out to Waltham there.
Nice, nice.
And take my bike on the train on the way back.
Oh yeah, because there's what is it? Is it commuter rail at that point or?
Yep, it's okay. Commuter rail, and there's also buses out there.
Is it a $5 ticket or?
It's probably more than that these days.
Okay. All right. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, and then if you go past there is Brandeis University.
So. Okay. Yeah, it's a nice ride. I mean, I don't remember how far I went. I feel like I want to say I went to Watertown, but I'm not sure about that.
Yeah. Yeah, Watertown's, I mean, it's kind of nice for riding around there.
Yeah.
You know, on the path, I guess.
It was a year ago, I think, that we were just out for a ride, and then I think we cut north trying to get back, like, to Alewife or Medford, yeah. Basically.
I heard they built a nice new little boardwalk connection to the Alewife and a path up along what I guess is Route 16 up along Alewife Brook.
Is that by like the Lands and Games where the bowling alley is?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Okay. Adele and I were trying to get there a couple years ago, yeah. And we got lost,
it's a
like
nightmare.
Walking. And it was nighttime and it was cold. It might have been raining too. We hated life at that point.
Yeah.
No, we were trying so hard to make it work. We were like... I don't think she was doing this, but I was, like, trying to make a point of, like, we can get there by public transit and everything.
Yeah.
And we did not. Somebody picked us up. And it was, like, we were so close, and yet we couldn't find our way.
Sometimes you sort of want to make that point, you know,
right.
Especially when you're, like, you know, you're not a car person, and you just want to, you know, you can make it work, and it's, like, you know, and then it falls apart, or, you know, you get people that are, like, offering you rides, and, like, you won't take the ride, and then,
right.
And then if it doesn't work out, you have to sort of... You know, but that's really, really rare that sort of thing happens.
Standing up for your principles.
Yeah, I don't know that I can tell my friends after that. I would probably have to, I don't know. I might have to, like, bike it home or, like,
right.
You know, call
like,
somebody else.
Can't admit that, yeah. If you're already doing it to make a point, then you're kind of stuck with that
yeah.
point. You have to like that point, wherever it gets you.
But yeah, I was complaining before that, you know, we were riding. I was complaining that, you know, there's people that would like to sort of find the inconsistencies and try to, you know, call you on it. So that, you know, they're like, but you, like, rented a car to, like, move all your hardware. It's like, you know,
automatic disqualification makes you a bad person.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. I feel like I've, in some ways, I've buckled down even more to my principles recently, but I've also gotten more forgiving or something. Like, I don't know. The world that we live in is not built to the scale that we'd like it to be, and so... It makes it a lot harder for everything, like, I don't know, the right way, air quotes, or you know,
yeah.
In a better way.
Yeah, I mean, that's the, you know, we're living in a world where it's very, can be very difficult in many places to live without a car. And, you know, it's easy for somebody with certain privilege to be like, okay, well, sure, you know, you just move to a bigger city. And that's certainly the goal if you're, you know, if you're trying to do something that's, like, outside the norm or, you know, more progressive or whatever. I mean, you're going to try to move to the big cities, but... it's not always feasible. You know, maybe you live with your parents.
Exactly.
You can't always, so you work with what you have. And especially if you're, like, if you're used to the car lifestyle and then you decide to go car-free, and then it's, like, a big shift. And, you know,
yeah.
Do you want to leave all your friends and go somewhere else? It's not easy.
Yeah, and it's tricky. I feel like, I don't remember when I mentioned this. At some point recently, I talked on the show about, like, having friends that are mostly not bikey people or, like, mostly car-dependent, without a lot of interest in the bicycle direction, so just like thinking,
yeah,
how do I work with this? Because not be friends with people that I care about anymore, just because, you know, because of this thing. But,
right, and people often just don't understand, you know, so it's it can be tough, and it can definitely be tough. And in terms of everything, is about, like, you know, we operate on social pressure. We're social creatures, so, you know, it can be tough when majority of people want to do something and you're the minority.
Right.
But I mean, I guess the bicyclist is probably a good kind of minority to be in terms of the, you know, the struggles that you have to deal with in life.
Oh, also in Providence.
Yes, we went up to College Hill.
Was it College Hill? So what, RISDA and Brown?
Yes.
Or is it RISD?
RISD.
Okay.
Rhode Island School of Design at Brown University up there. We didn't see much of the campus, but we got up the hill and then we found ourselves starting to go down. And we're
saw
like,
the
okay.
sunset.
Yeah, it was cool.
That was enough.
Yep. I wanted to go back up the hill, but Brock was like, no.
You did not want to go back up the hill.
Yeah, that's true.
I call bullshit. What was that? That was intense, though, because, I mean, you've got several gears in the Brompton.
Yeah.
There's still a steep hill.
Right.
Josh from Bike Safe Boston lent me his paper bicycle, man. That was... It's only one speed, and it wasn't low enough to get up that hill.
No, we both had to walk it.
Seriously.
We both made it, I think, more than halfway, at least.
I don't think we lose any pride with that, though.
No.
We still made it to the top of the hill.
I'll forgive you.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. No, so then, you know, we're just speaking of taking the train back to Boston, and we're, you know, we're kind of... It was a good day, a good little adventure. And I don't know, what are we doing tonight?
I'm probably going to go home and go to bed early.
Okay. Good idea.
Got up too early today.
Yeah, so I was making fun of Brock before. I was not really, mostly you know, sarcastically making fun of Brock for not having a bike helmet.
I'm not wearing a helmet. I have not worn a helmet for what, like 6 months, 9 months, something like that.
And it's with a sarcasm because I don't. This is my position that I don't make fun of people for not wearing bike helmets. I think that the only reason because my mirror attaches to it and it makes it a lot easier for me to. Use a mirror.
That's useful.
And I think that's the only reason I still wear the helmet, because it does get annoying at times. Actually, it keeps me a little bit warmer, too.
Yeah, winter. Yeah. A day like today, that's useful.
Yeah. But it's amazing if you... I have had times where I've forgotten it, because if I don't put it right on the bike, no handlebars, or if I take a different bike, I tend to forget it. And, you know, now that I have the mirror on it, like, I'll notice often and go back, but... I might not notice until like a few miles away.
Right.
And but it's amazing that people, when they see you don't have a helmet,
mm-hmm.
especially people who don't ride bikes.
Right. Well, yeah, that was funny. Actually, I think I got most of the comments I remember getting when not wearing a helmet were from people driving vehicles, I think, like autos. Yeah, just about all of them.
Yeah. Them and the people who, you know, the bike advocates who want to be like, you know, very politically... in tune, politically correct.
Right.
They sort of want to appear that they're... Because I think the problem with bike helmets is that this is... It's what our mainstream culture sees as bike safety, right? I mean, nobody who has any real influence in bike planning and street planning knows anything about what actually makes it safe to bike in places.
Yeah, like there's a lot of things besides a plastic hat that make you actually safe in traffic, like with habits and... safe practice and all that.
Right, knowing how to drive a bicycle properly.
Sure.
I use the term drive a bicycle intentionally.
I like that.
And, yeah, there's actually a guy that he has a blog called Bicycle Driving.
And, bicycledriving.com.
Yeah, and, you know, it's, yeah, it's, there's the benefits of the piece of plastic are a little bit questionable to begin with. So, I don't know, I say, I think it's probably a good idea. But
it can't hurt you.
It can't hurt you, but
yeah,
whatever. Other things I have to worry about in life.
I got tired of buying expensive helmets.
There you go.
So, and then I just got tired of wearing one. The thing I have noticed is that like, if I am in traffic, like I feel like if I have a hat, I get more respect than if I'm just out there with my hair.
There's a guy who did a study on that.
Really?
I don't know if you heard of him. I think he was in Florida.
Okay.
I want to say his name was Ian Walker.
Okay.
I have to check that.
He's a
psychology professor, and he was mostly dealing with like two-lane rural roads where he is in wherever the University of Florida is or some other university. But basically, he was doing a bunch of tests, and he was trying to see, you know, if what made drivers give him more passing room and, you know, what made drivers slow down. And
yeah.
The helmet was definitely one of those things that, you know, if he had a helmet, he got a little less room. And his theory was that if he had no helmet, then drivers were a little bit more worried or thought he might have been like a beginner or novice.
Right, he's generally unsafe.
Yeah, I mean, you know, who knows? But he, the other thing he said is, like, he like, sort of pretended to wobble a little bit.
Oh, okay, this is the, like, guy. Okay, yeah, I did read that one.
Right, and so he...
Is that the guy that dressed up in women's clothing?
Yes, to see he about also... That? Yeah. He also did women's clothing, you know, like, wig and long hair and stuff, and he measured with, like, lasers and stuff to see how the distance, right. And he always got more passing room.
Yeah, I think... I believe I remember Lovely Bicycle referencing that study at some point, so, yeah. That's
there
hilarious.
You go, Brock. There you go, Brock. You should not wear a helmet.
I'm growing my hair out again.
Nice, yes. Your hair, I don't know what's the deal, man. I mean,
my hair's gross right now.
I don't know what you're...
I need a haircut.
If you're talking about your hair on the podcast, but, I mean, it's like in the same exact condition as it was when I saw you this morning.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
For me, I don't know. I mean, I get the worst case of... Everybody makes fun of me because I have the worst case of helmet hair.
Oh, sure. It's about pushing all my hair in one direction and putting the hat over the top of it. Yes. So basically, I have hat hair all the time.
Okay.
Yeah.
Nice.
So that's if that gives the illusion that I'm well manicured, that's good. That's kind of, it's actually one of my requirements for getting a haircut is that I don't have to do too much to actually, like, you know.
Yes.
I can basically roll out of bed in the morning and look okay.
Yeah, I'm with you on that.
Yeah.
There's way too much time put into things that are not simplistic.
If it didn't take that much time to make a hair look good, I would do it, but. Styling hair takes too much time, in my opinion, for my own preferences.
All right.
Where are we now?
Sounds like Attleboro.
Attleboro. I'm looking out the window, and it's like the bumpy yellow strip is like at my shoulder level or something.
Yeah, we're sitting
we're
in
the
a
low riding train.
We're sitting in a double decker car, which is kind of cool. And
on the lower level.
Yeah. So below the ground, it's a little weird.
I can dig it.
Yeah. Yeah. It's nice.
Commuter rail.
In Massachusetts, it's pretty much all like. Park and ride. It's built around park and ride stations, and so you know, there's not a whole lot going on in most of these stations, and even in a lot of these old towns, they have the old train station. You know, you can see the depot as you're passing by, but when they reinstituted the commuter rail in the 70s and 80s, they didn't really use these stations most of the time. They just built a parking lot, you know, down like a couple miles away, and you know, it's great if you're driving there and parking there, but. You know, if you get out on foot, there's nothing.
The same thing about Amtrak, like when you go to the small towns that Amtrak passes through but doesn't stop at. There's all these stations just waiting for a train to stop there, and they look so lonely and underused, and I feel bad for them. So someday, when we run this country, there will be a train station in every town, and all the parking lots will be ripped up and turned into gardens, and everybody will ride a bike, and it'll be lovely.
Yes.
Biketopia.
Yes.
Well, should we sign off?
All right.
It's all good. This is the Sprocket Podcast, sprocketpodcast.com.
And you can find Jeremy at criticaltransit.com.
And anything else for the world before we're done?
No, you can come find me and you know, I'll be around.
All right. Yank your chain a little bit.
Yeah.
All right. Good times. Well, there it is. We also have some stories from Breakfast on the Bridges in Portland, 10-year anniversary of people handing out free coffee and pastries. On multiple bridges, and we will roll some clips from that thanks to Steph Routh. I almost forgot her name. That would suck. Steph Routh was very kind to make some recording event back when this happened in October, I think. We'll verify that. Again, many thanks to Steph Routh from OregonWalks.org, formerly known as the Willamette Pedestrian Coalition, also from the KBU Bike Show and many other things around town that you should probably know about. Check all of those things out, starting with OregonWalks.org and KBU, KBOO.org, and their bike show. And now, Breakfast on the Bridges.
I will tell you how I got roped into it. Is Ben Doyle one day sent out a message to the listserv saying, "Hey, I can't make it on Friday. Can someone step up and help out?" And I said, "Just one day? Sure, I'll do that." So then it was a matter of going to find Carl at the BTA, who I had met but didn't really know. Got the trailer, got the lesson on how to hook up the trailer. Then I had to go and get the mugs at Ben's office. And then I had to get the pots from someone. I don't even remember who had the pots. And there was no one to donate coffee, so I ended up just, like, buying the cheapest, skankiest coffee I could find. And
the only time that's happened.
Yeah, every other time it's been primo stuff, just so you know.
And there's always fresh beef.
Yes. And then the next month, I actually go down to Columbia and pick them myself. Juan Valdez and I go out. He and his burro and my bike, we make that happen. But yeah, the next month, then Ben called me again and said, "Hey, I can't do this again. Can you do it?" I'm like, "All right." So, well, that was 3 years ago. So be aware if you hang out with us, you may get roped in. But it's really fun. So, you should do that. All right. So, who wants to tell their story of how they got involved now? Theo, everyone. I'm sure you all know, but if you don't.
Which is a funny thing to say, because that has a lot to do with my story. So my name is Theo, and I moved to Portland in 2007. And I got my first job in Portland in 2008, in February of 2008, in Old Town at Pendleton Woolen Mills. And I had zero friends. I knew zero people. I had zero acquaintances. I didn't do anything social. But there was one thing that I could look forward to every month, and that was breakfast on the bridge. I could go across on my normal route on the steel bridge at that time and have brunch with lovely people, drink some coffee, smile, meet some people. I started bumping into Daniel Johnson, not only at breakfast on the bridge, but at Backspace, which was where I'd go at lunch. So then I had one regular friend and acquaintance who was still awesome. And that is pretty much the social foundation of my life in Portland. So thank you, Breakfast on the Bridge, everyone who's ever stopped, and everyone who's ever volunteered.
All right, who's next? Who else wants to tell our story of so many people? Timo, do you want to tell? You've been doing it forever. You guys, I want to get the people who've been doing it the longest up here. Enthusiasm award for Timo.
I want to thank you all for coming tonight. It's really nice of you to celebrate 10 years of Breakfast on the Bridge. And how do I know it's 10 years? Because I have documentation. All of you in the radio audience also can look at this. It's a copy of the Bike Summer 2002 calendar, and you'll hear maybe a similar theme. At least Theo and I share a thread, and perhaps others. I, however, moved to Portland in 1995, and in 2002, when Bike Summer came along, I still had no friends, no social life, no one to hang out with. But I saw that there was this thing called Bike Summer happening. And one of the first items on the Bike Summer calendar, breakfast on the bridge. Yeah. Oddly scheduled between 6:30 and 7:30, I notice now.
How did you make it?
I don't know.
Timo never being known for showing up on the bridge.
There's a reason we have the term Timo time.
I think that something about the universal cycles of time must have slowed since between now and, I don't know, somehow. I do remember I missed several. But
well, now you know you can be winners when you do.
That's right. You just make the schedule you want. But I saw it on the schedule every week, and it was taunting me because there's nothing I like better than biking and donuts and free. And so I managed to make it to one of them, and the people there were really nice. In fact, I believe Aileen was there. It was on the Broadway Bridge, if I remember correctly. And I went back the next week, and the people were still nice. And they invited me to help out. And so I managed to, like, make it even earlier. I think it was maybe 6 a.m. that we were supposed to be at By and By? No. What was it called back then? The Red and Black? The... Help me out here.
Red Wing.
But Red Wing was preceded by...
by Alex Marbles.
Which I think was... Anyway, Red and Black. We'll say it was the Red and Black. I don't know how I made it down there in time to help carry coffee and pastries up to the bridge, but I did, which started me on a very odd path of, like, not only attending bike fun events, but also volunteering for them. And you probably wouldn't recognize that now because I haven't volunteered for a bike event in about 5 years. So don't follow my example, except for the part where I suddenly started making friends in 2002. And if you fill your name out on the volunteer sheet, wherever it is, you too, in, say, 10 years, can have this many people standing around looking at you.
And now you do bike rides for Bert.
I will just add, little did I know back in 2002 what strange and marvelous changes would occur in my life besides volunteering for bike events, besides finding out how to get free beer just for riding your bike, besides not only meeting lots of great people, and but eventually changing my way of livelihood and meeting the woman who would become my bride.
Aww. All from Breakfast on the Bridge?
It's amazing.
His number is on it in the bottom. Hey, Esther, maybe you should be the next person to...
I don't have anything else to say.
Oh. All right, so...
I think it's Aileen, then, because...
Hi, I'm Aileen Crotty. I'm the festival director of Filmed by Bike and a huge fan of bike culture in Portland. Filmed by Bike wouldn't be where it is today without all of this stuff that happens. So it's super exciting to see a room full of people here who support and love Breakfast on the Bridge and hearing stories like from Theo that he met his friends through Breakfast on the Bridge. I guess I'll start off my story by saying the Broadway Bridge is my favorite bridge in Portland, and that was my primary bridge during Breakfast on the Bridges. And sometimes it was my job to be there first, and I absolutely love Halloween, so I'm almost always in costume. And one morning I was on the Broadway Bridge in my costume, and I was leaning over looking at the beautiful bridge over the river, and all of a sudden the cop cars came from all directions. They came opposite way down the lanes of traffic and everything, and they swarmed in on me, and the guy got out of his car and he said, "You're not going to jump, are you?" And I was like, "No, no, no, it's just Breakfast on the Bridge. We give out coffee and donuts." He had never heard of it. This is a new thing. It didn't really happen all that often. That's how I started my day that day. The rest of the day was followed by giving out coffee and donuts to people. But I give all the credit for Breakfast on the Bridges to a fella named Arf Khan, who was heavily involved with both the Bicycle Transportation Alliance and the Community Cycling Center back in the day. And he would go and sit on the bridge and give out cookies in the afternoon to people to thank them for having ridden to work and being headed home. I stole his idea and decided it was so good we should do it every week during bike summer, which was pretty ambitious. I don't know who staffed all those bridges. I don't know. Ken might know. He has got a great memory. But I don't know how we did it, but we did it. I didn't last all that long. After a couple years, I got really burnt out. I was super impressed that Timo carried the torch after that, especially because I know he's not, like, known as a morning dude, so I really never understood how that all worked out. But it's amazing to see. We've taken it on the road. We went to Vancouver, BC, and did Breakfast on the Bridges up there. We've done Breakfast on the Pathway in Seattle. So we've been able to take this concept. We've seen other cities are now looking towards, obviously, what Portland does and doing a lot of the exciting bike culture things that we do here. But to me, it's amazing to see that this crazy concept of giving out coffee and donuts has continued for 10 years. So thank you all for being out here tonight and for all you do to keep Breakfast on the Bridges going. Thanks.
Next up is Santa Garcia.
No, I'm the virgin, Guadalupe.
In case you didn't know, I'm a virgin, ladies, I'm available. Every December...
He's only available if you have beer money.
Because everybody wants to sleep with someone who doesn't know what they're doing.
Yes. Bob Breakfast on the Bridges. Every December, we have a problem. and that is that Christmas occurs pretty close to the last Friday of the month. And every November we have a problem, and that Thanksgiving occurs pretty close to the last Friday of the month. So we split the difference and have breakfast on the bridges in the middle of December. And what better day to celebrate than the Feast of Santa Lucia? Unfortunately, Timo did not bring his costume. I'm the only guy wearing a dress in this room right now, but...
Well, is young.
Yes, it could get better. So Esther dared me one day, Esther, the bride, dared me one day to show up in a red dress, and I did. And I don't think Timo even noticed, because he was wearing a white dress. And of course, it was a very strange thing. But we have a great time doing this in the rain, in the snow. Have we ever done it in the snow?
Yeah. I've been there in snow.
Okay, well, good. Someone else did it in the snow. I have the same story as Theo, actually, where I moved here in 2007. I met 90% of my friends through Shift, and Breakfast on the Bridge is very welcoming. I, in fact, for the first 2 years of Breakfast on the Bridges, did not go over a bridge on my commute. Except when I made an effort to do so. So I worked downtown, I lived on the west side. But it's been wonderful. I've met tons of cool people. I have cooked some impressive foods on the side of the river.
Hell yeah.
And since 3 years ago, Petalpalooza, I cooked 5 pounds of bacon one morning. I'm pretty sure I beat Lily.
Yeah, I remember that.
We had a meatitarians versus vegans fight off. And her biscuits and gravy, surprisingly good for vegan biscuits and gravy. But I cooked a lot of bacon, and I don't know what your response was, but it wasn't 5 pounds of bacon. So I think I won that one. The best thing that happened at Breakfast on the Bridges was actually a collaboration between Lily and I where we cooked donuts on the bridge, as in brought oil out, frying. We had to make donuts the night before so they'd rise and everything. It brought the donuts out on special trays on a trailer and deep fried them for your enjoyment.
That was insane.
Yes. And we'd like to find the kind of people who want to think outside the box like that, because 10 years, a lot has been done, but there's a lot more to do.
Don't forget the beignets.
Oh, well, same story. You can deep fry things.
Yes.
Take it up a level, people.
Well, same sentiment as everyone else. It's where I kind of really, like Ryan, I stepped in thinking, oh, I'm just going to help out, and the next thing I know, it's 6 years running, and... but it was a blast every moment of it. I loved that, the time I spent doing that. Some of the funny moments. Oh, what was I just gonna say? Crap. my memory. So the first person to beat you to cooking though on the bridge was Nick Pope, he's the guy who made all the shelving that hang off of the thing. He's a climbing expert. I still have it. It's at my house somewhere. Maybe. There, is that him clicking flapjacks on the bridge? There it is. He built this crazy contraption that he would carry down to the bridge every month that was looked like Lucy, you know, on Charlie Brown, you know, what was it? The something is in. Yeah, yeah. So he built this thing. He had a little crazy sign up there, and he had a little place to cook stuff, and so that was pretty amazing. I remember the time when we took the breakfast on the bridge to the Fremont. That's right. It was bridge pedal. Okay, so it wasn't as dangerous as it seems. But it apparently was too dangerous. Oh, with Markham.
We did both.
Right. Wait.
We did both.
Wait, no, it was the Fremont.
We did both.
No, it was the Fremont. Then we got, absolutely, it was the Fremont.
We tried on the Markham, we succeeded on the Fremont.
No, only for a short time. We were on the Fremont for a while. And then the powers that be decided we were a threat somehow, and they actually kicked us off. And so then we went down to I-405, and started, because it was closed, and stood on the side of I-405 and served coffee. So that was kind of fun.
Wait for our radio audience. Who are you?
Oh, I'm Ken Sutherland. Radio audience. And that's all I have right now. I probably have other memories that come to mind, but
there'll be more time later.
Yeah, yeah. Anyway, thanks.
So I'm inspired to come up because of Ken, who was the first person I met on Breakfast on the Bridges. He may not even realize this. But I forget how I ended up there. I ended up there. I met this cool guy, Ken. He may have even given me a business card or something. I think some sort of shift card. And I was like, shift, okay, all right. And then I went to Critical Mass because that existed at that time afterwards. And I had a great time. And there were these kids from Lewis and Clark. Megan would probably remember who they are. But I remember we got donuts with the police afterwards, and it was really weird, and they were just having a great time, and so was I, and they're like, where should we go now? And Mark Ginsburg, who I met that night, along with Ellie Blue and Jason Worcester, Mark said, hey, my friend Ken is having a party. You should go to his party. And so I had no idea where this was, so I went to some punk show at a house that I had no idea where that is now either. The Captured by Porches was there, was in a basement, it was great, and then everyone was drunk and we had to go to Ken's house. And we get there, and Ken's party, which I guess Mark had been invited to, was not really a party as much as a dinner party, and it was like Ken and three people and a baby, like, sitting on the couch. And so it's like, we come in and we're like, hey, it's a party. And my relationship with Ken maybe wasn't great that night, but it improved over time. And I'm really grateful for that. And the next month I showed up for Breakfast on the Bridges, and it was actually cold enough that there was frost. And I get there and there's one person there before me. I won't give this person's name, but they had opted to defrost the bridge because there were frost concerns. And the methodology for this, as a New Englander, I found questionable. They took the hot water for tea and just poured it all over the bridge to melt it. We're just going to melt this. And that, it froze, believe it or not. So that water froze, and recognizing the danger, this person then decided that if there was some sort of obstacle, something in the frozen puddle of water, then people would recognize the need to slow down. So this person then put plastic bags all over this frozen puddle. And so then as people approached it, they would just grab the brakes and crash. So,
wait, this is what happens to your logic when you wake up at 4 in the morning?
Yeah, in fairness, that's true. And that may have been what happened. So luckily, there was some stash of sand underneath the bridge. And I got some and, like, sanded the bridge. Which leaves me in telling this story at risk of sounding like my dad, who loves stories about how everyone's a moron and I'm the only person who knows how to do things right, and you wouldn't believe what this moron did. And thank God I'm the only smart person around. But there were some things that happened thanks to Breakfast on the Bridge that my dad never would have gone for, like going to punk shows and ending up at Ken's house and actually meeting not one, but two future girlfriends on Breakfast on the Bridges, both of whom were vegan. So this is, like, very far outside of my father's realm. And so I love my dad, but I'm really happy to have been involved in Breakfast on the Bridges because it introduced me to a whole new world and a whole bunch of people. So thanks. I'm Carl Larson. Thanks, guys.
All right, so I'm Sean Granton, and my story about how I started with Breakfast on the Bridges is sort of boring. It's not like B&B changed my life. I mean, it sort of did, but it's not like I had already lived in town for like a year and change and already had friends, so I knew people, and I didn't even really start going when it first started. Yeah. That's another story. I love you guys. So I don't even really know exactly how it ended up that I ended up on Breakfast on the Bridges. I mean, I've never really worked downtown and hate waking up early. But, like, I know for sure by 2004 it was me and Timo on the Broadway Bridge with a pot of coffee and some donuts for And it was pretty much me and Timo for quite a while. I think that we were really, especially like late 2005, it was really like the hello, is there anybody else that might want to help type. I think so, yeah. That was sort of the impetus around early 2006, because I had to look at the Beyond B list today for reasons I don't really want to get into right now, but it started, I believe, in January 2006, and Ellie Blue was the person that started the list, because Ellie, as Ellie does, if people don't know who Ellie is, you know, she really gets sort of motivated, and we sort of talked, and it's like, we need to get people in, maybe we should create a Rise Up list, and, you know, motivate people and get them all involved, and so that's who you can have really to thank for the Beyond B Rise Up list is Ellie Blue for that, who is not with us tonight. So yeah, I mean, the story of that, like me getting involved, as I said, it's sort of hazy memories. I think I lived in North Portland at the time. Vague recollections of that era of my life. And I do remember going up to Vancouver, BC a couple times and trying to do a Beyond B style stuff up there with the Vancouver bike community, though we didn't do it on the bridges, we did it on bikeways. But the story that I'm going to tell right now is sort of an interesting piece of Breakfast on the Bridges history, and many of you probably have no idea what the hell I'm going to be talking about until it comes out of my mouth right now. Some of you might. It's a story of Stinky McDonut. Does that register anything with anybody in here? Hands. Stinky McDonut. It's a few people here. So we have to go back many years to probably, I think it was 2006, if my memory serves me correctly. Bush II was still in the White House. Tom Potter was still mayor. And people were still confusing Timo and Ken. Yeah. And so there was this, around the time we started the B&B listserv list. That was redundant. We decided that, you know, it was just the bridges. It was just Broadway and Hawthorne. And remember, does anybody remember Broadway? Yeah. Yeah, okay. Yeah. So we had this idea. It was like, you know, it's like we're trying to reach out to the West Side, where it's like, you know, they don't have to cross a bridge, or, you know, we should, like, do some more, like, extracurricular Beyond Bees or outside of the last Friday of the month. And so I forget, it probably was me, because I was young and stupid at that time. And I decided we should do a Breakfast on Terwilliger, one off morning. Yeah, Breakfast on Terwilliger, because, you know, people are going to go to OHSU and all that stuff up there that are up maybe on the West Side, and they're never going to cross the Hawthorne or Broadway bridges. So we're going to go, you know, set up somewhere on Terwilliger and do the thing. And it was not really a success. I mean, people really, really didn't get it on Terwilliger. We got a few people stopping, and there was one guy that was really, really confused about what we were doing. Like, he stopped and he was like, you know, what is this? And we explained the B&B thing. And he's just like, well, what do you guys should be doing is getting all those people on cars driving Terwilliger out of their cars. And it's like, well, yeah, I mean, there's a time and place advocacy for this, but this is sort of the thank you for the people that are out of the cars. And he's like, oh. So I don't know if he was humoring it or not. So, but the key thing to this whole story of Stinky McDonut, the legend of, and I need to take a sip of beer. Yeah. On the way in, and I forget who I was riding with. It could have been Ellie, for all I know. We were crossing the Hawthorne Bridge this morning. And as I said, this is like a spring of 2006. It was not the last Friday. We're crossing it. Yeah, it was like the first, second, third, maybe even fourth Friday, if it was a five Friday month. But it was not the last Friday. And, I mean, I'm sure if we go to the B&B list, if you really want to look through the archives in 2006, we can find this stuff. So we were crossing the Hawthorne Bridge, and we're like, what the hell's going on up here? Like, you know, we get up to the end, to the West End, and there's people set up, and they're giving out coffee and donuts. And they're also, like, lubing chains and doing quick adjustments. And they had bike gallery shirts on. And had signs about the bike gallery. And they're like, do you need any coffee? Could we lube your chain? And we're like, what? Sure. And I think I took a sip of coffee, and or maybe I didn't, because I was just so confused about what was going on. And I'm like, what the hell, man? This is, you know, this is our thing. Bike gallery is encroaching on it. And so I probably, you know, expressed the displeasure with this, maybe on the B&B list, or, you know, communicated via homing pigeon with somebody else. And sometime later that day, in a public institution somewhere in Portland, there was a letter crafted by a Stinky McDonut whose true identity will never be revealed, especially not on radio. I think this is radio, right? To Jay Graves of Bike Gallery. The owner of Bike Gallery. It was a cease and desist type letter. Stinky McDonut was concerned about brand dilution of Breakfast on the Bridges. Wasn't having that. Now the backstory, if anybody can remember, if people read Bike Portland back in that era, back in those peaty days of 2005, 2006, does anybody ever hear of a bike called the Stump Jumper? Remember when there was a company in Portland that had a bike called the Stump Town?
Bullshit.
Yes. And so this company in Stump, the Stump Town company decided, the people, I forget which company it was. Was that? Mountain Cycle. Okay. Specialized sued Mountain Cycle for dilution of brand identity because of the stump in the name. So this was sort of big in the minds of people, and especially in the bike industry and bike community of Portland at the time. So, and that letter by Stinky McDonut, the cease and desist letter to Bike Gallery Jay Graves, was distributed probably electronically. And it wasn't that long before we heard some grumblings and some talk, probably with the Jonathan Moss saying something about the fact that, like, Jay Graves got this letter and he's really, really scared. Who's doing this? Yes, I think it was probably April, because I think I remember it was on the Bunny on the Bike Ride 2006, Carrie By's ride, and you know Jonathan was on the ride and he was talking about it and asking people on the ride. It's like, does anybody know what the Stinky McDonut thing is? Jay Graves is really worried and really concerned that you know he's getting cease and desist letter, and I was like, no, I don't really know anything about it. I have no idea what you're talking about. Yes. But to this day, Jonathan Moss still does not know who Stinky McDonut is. Nor does Jay Graves. So, if you go to Bike Gallery and you get a bad experience, just threaten retribution by Stinky McDonut, and I'm sure you'll get a full refund, back massage. They'll throw it at Trek Portland, too, the, you know, that they haven't sold yet. You're golden.
All the Trek bikes they
can't. If I don't, yes. I'm coming to you.
I said it in the beginning. I'll say it again. I am not Stinky McDonut.
That was Sean Granton, ladies and gentlemen.
Okay, first, because, you know, we're going to have to use this, I want to check the levels. Okay, we're okay. Okay, so my name is Steph Rouse. There's actually a lot of stories that I want to hear, and it's a question of, like, which one I want to tell based on the ones that other people don't want to say. And we won't talk about the months, which months the coffee was dumpster dived, but you know who you were. It's all delicious. And OSHA compliant. It's boiled and percolated. So, and then boiled again. And then, you know, left. Because no one wants to get up that early. So, I've been doing it for 6 years. I actually started in 2006. I had been back from Asia, where I'd lived for 4 years. And I had, like, gone by the Hawthorne Bridge when I still lived on the southeast side, all these months, and there were, like, all of these lollygaggers who were just hanging out, and I didn't exactly know why. And then one time I stopped, because there's this guy, Aaron, who was like, fresh donuts, and they look delicious, even though I don't like donuts. I was like, well, that was sweet. And then I realized that they had coffee, and it was awesome. And then started talking, and then there was Ken and a few other folks, and then I was like, well, hey, do you need any help? And
of course you do.
And exactly. The Ken is doing the exact representation of what he did at that point. But then they were starting, because I think that there was brewing tended to happen at People's Co-op, and it was kind of like this involved process, and no one wanted to necessarily. Well, it was also your house, but it was also like people's, and then there were AirPods that were left there, and it was weird. But and then so they were like, well, how about some hot water? Because I was working like five blocks away. I was like, great, because I have some air bag, like some dry bags, because I had been doing skin diving in Thailand, and so like I brought these two dry bags, and there was like, and it wasn't dry, because this is America and they don't make that. And so like the water was dripping down, and I think it was Patrick's lady who like saw it, and like she put it into the you know, the gallon, 5 gallon bucket, and it was like this high, and she was like, and you could tell like she was disappointed, and she was hoping for more. She was like, but that's great. One, I just screwed up, and two, you're awesome. And then 2 months later, I started brewing, and Ken was like, awesome, I'm sleeping in. I just kind of started, but we did it because I used to work at a small nonprofit, so I just had dual. I would get there at, I think, 5:30 in the morning, and it was kind of like, you know, udders. I had two coffee pots that I think I got for $5 each, and I just, you know, replenish, you know, so we'd go through three or four full processes. And I remember one time I was having a meeting in that room with Augusto from Nossa Familia. And, you know, we were talking about bikes, and we were talking about international development, because his family from Brazil, his grandfather had actually built a microhydro, small unknown fact, his grandfather had actually built a microhydro facility, which is what Nossa Familia's coffee was fueled by, think 9 months out of the year, totally awesome. And so we were talking, it was all really exciting. And then I was saying, hey, and I brew for breakfast on the bridge, and it would be great if you gave us coffee. And he was like, oh, where do you brew? And I was like, well, here. And he was like, with what? And I look at the, and he was like, you're fucking kidding. Awesome. It was like this absolute incredulity. It's like, that is so ridiculous. I don't even have to do with it. So I did it for 6 years. And the first time I actually didn't do it and meant to not do it was this past month. And thank you to Amanda, who is our new brewer for the Hawthorne Bridge. And I'll just end with saying some of the stories that I want to hear. And if we don't hear, we're going to conscript people to tell. One, how we're not on the Broadway Bridge anymore. Another, even though Ben didn't raise his hand for it, that he hasn't volunteered, breakfast in the bullpen at TriMet when we started at 4 a.m., not 7 a.m., was pretty good.
Okay, but Brian's next.
Due to my lack of Ken's memory, I'm bequeathing the phone to Lily.
Okay, so I'm going to tell two stories about breakfast on the bridges. One leads into the bullpen story. So I met all of my friends through shift. However, I did things that didn't involve getting up at 5 in the morning with shift first. And then there was, in Petapalooza of 2008, I think, I came up with this kind of insane concept called a Petapalooza century, where I decided I was going to do 100 Petapalooza events. Because doing Petapalooza wasn't exhausting enough, I had to, like, you know, I don't know, make a goal for myself that was insane. So one of those things was that I decided I would start volunteering for Breakfast on the Bridges. And, so I, you know, emailed Timo and got in on the Breakfast on the Bridges thing. And then, you know, I thought I would just help out for Petapalooza, and like many people ended up, that was 2008. And so I started to learn there were advantages to being a Breakfast on the Bridges volunteer other than just the unlimited pastries. This is before I drank coffee, before I fell into the deep dark hole of Breakfast on the Bridges coffee addiction. I remember there was this super cute guy who came to Breakfast on the Bridges all the time, and I kept being like, man, that dude is really cute. And then I found out that he was going to be volunteering. I worked at the Bicycle Transportation Alliance at the time, and I found out he was going to be coming to the Alice Awards, which I was helping run, and so I possibly abused my database abilities and the fact that I was doing seating for the Alice Awards and I seated the cute boy at my table. And I was like, hey, he's not already assigned to a table. I have a table. There's going to be a lot of free wine. Long story short, we dated for like 2 years, and he's in this room. Possibly decimated one of the auction items after the event. But Burks on the Bridges plus database access at the BTA was really awesome. But during the course of my time volunteering for Breakfast on the Bridges, we did the Breakfast on a Bullpen event, and the deep love of Breakfast on the Bridges that this boyfriend had and somehow compelled him to get up with me at like 2:30 in the morning to go to bike all the way from Northeast down to the TriMet headquarters. We were at Breakfast on the Bullpen was an attempt to do outreach to TriMet drivers from bikers to just say thank you for being awesome and being bus drivers and like talk to them about the experience of biking versus buses. And it was shortly after we had done, I think the TriMet contacted us and wanted to use the powers of Breakfast on the Bridges for good and bought us lots of coffee and donuts to feed people to tell them about the bus mall opening downtown, and because they were worried about cyclists killing themselves on the tracks. That was probably the only time in history that the coffee and donuts was delivered by bus instead of by bicycle, it was kind of awesome. But so we did this Breakfast on the Bullpen, and normally we get buckets of donuts from Voodoo Donuts, which is open 24 hours, and the buckets come out at 4 a.m., which was too early for Breakfast on the Bullpen. So we show up, and we're like, hey, we need to pick up a bucket of donuts, and they're like, we don't have buckets this early in the morning. We're like, what? So we had to buy a dozen of donuts and haul them down there. And Breakfast on the Bullpen was interesting in that the bus drivers start getting there at 4 a.m. and we stayed until I think 7 maybe. And they get progressively less neat as you go on. The ones that show up at 4 in the morning all were like very starched collars and, you know, perfect posture. And the ones that show up, the slackers that start their shift at like 6:30 in the morning, are, you know, slightly untucked and not nearly as neatly pressed. One of the guys that ended up talking to us was a bus driver who had done critical mass stuff in Portland back in the late 90s. And then at one point someone told him, you should become a bus driver. And he said, okay. And it was like 15 years later, he's still a bus driver. I'm going to give three tips I've learned from years of Breakfast on the Bridges volunteering. First one is bring a second pair of shoes. If you wear bike shoes, because standing on a metal bridge for 2 hours will freeze your feet off. Two is if during Pedalpalooza, it's better to show up still drunk than it is to show up with 1 hour of sleep. So just stay out all night. If you're out at like a North Freak ride or something, just keep drinking. That's the only way. Actually, I think I only had two tips. But
that second one was worth two.
you have done this before. And the third is that the Safeway by the Lloyd Center is open till 1 a.m. if you need to pick up Bisquick when you get back from a late night ride during Pedalpalooza and you're like, oh crap, I have to make pancakes at 5 in the morning.
And you can always get Folgers at Flat Pantry.
Yes. The dangerous.
We've never used Folgers.
We've never served you Folgers.
Hypothetically.
Do you have anything to add about? Do you have anything to add about Bullpen?
Yes.
All right, Ben. Don't worry, Brian.
This has been Foot. Thank you so much, Lily. The only thing that I would add about Bullpen was that it was fascinating to sit there and watch the process of bus drivers taking their buses, and that there was this ticking clock on the wall in which bus drivers had to arrive and receive their kit, which was, you know, some aspect of an electronic card that went into the bus. You know, I'm a technologist, so I was fascinated by the technology of it. But then also how much
like the clock was ticking. They had to arrive by this very specific moment in order to be able to take over responsibility of their bus. And if they didn't, there was somebody sitting there on standby waiting to take their shift, and they would get all sorts of demerits or whatnot. There was this very, I don't know, it felt like, you know, high school detention is waiting for you if you do not take over your bus by the appropriate, you know, of course, most people, I have to say, everyone there that morning was very professional and was just there to do their job, of course. But there was this aspect of this very punitive consequence for not taking over your responsibility that was kind of fascinating.
They all had coffee but not donuts.
What's that?
They all had coffee but not donuts.
They all had coffee but not donuts. I don't remember this. What is this?
Everyone who arrived at 3 a.m. for their 4 a.m. shift, because you arrive like an hour early, they all had Dutch Brothers. And they were like, oh, you have coffee? That's okay.
Oh, that's right. That's right. Yes, that's a great point. They already had their coffee before showing up at the office, at the bullpen. But, yeah, they were all about the donuts.
Yeah, we left with, like, two extra AirPods.
We had tons of coffee left over because they already had their coffee. My name, again, is Ben Foote. Thank you.
Hi. I'm Brian Scrivener, better known as Organic Brian to most. Thank you. Carl, I feel certain I would... Where has Carl gone? I feel certain I would get along really well with his dad. because I feel mostly infuriated with most people most of the time, but you can count me among the ranks of people who for whom my social life comes care of the Bike Fund community in Portland. These are the folks that I've accepted, and I adore the irreverent, zany, and creative disrespect for the status quo and the energy and driving forward to something different.
By that you mean dress code.
Yes. And speaking of dress code, one of the first things I think of when I think of Breakfast on the Bridges is Superhero Breakfast on the Bridges, which combined two of my favorite things, traffic safety activism and superheroes. It's happened more than once. The first time I remember it happening was around 2007 or so. There had been a recent death by automobile, and the idea was started somehow somewhere that we should have a superhero traffic safety breakfast on the bridges. Signs were made, costumes were created, and on a Friday morning we were out there, watch for cyclists, you know, watch when turning right, all that sort of thing. There were superheroes, signs held by superheroes who you've never heard of before. Ellie Blue was a nap-themed superhero. She had a sleeping mask on her forehead and was in her pajamas. There was a cape that looked like pajama flannel, I think. And there was, I wish I could remember, a really creative and very funny superhero name that was evocative of sleeping. A pun or a rhyme or something. The next thing I think of when I think of Breakfast on the Bridges is how Breakfast on the Bridges used to invade the bridge pedal. Does anyone remember this? It wasn't authorized by bridge pedal. In fact, there was a bridge pedal organizer. Somebody tell me his name. Who
Dick.
Really?
Rick. Yeah.
Rick Bauman. Rick Bauman, for a while his name was used as a swear word. So a shifter, instead of saying shit, would say Bauman. It wasn't authorized. Breakfast on the Bridges crashed the bridge pedal in that a feeding station was set up on the bridge pedal route, and at times it was on a bridge. It wasn't a Breakfast on the Bridges official event, but it was the Breakfast on the Bridges crew, and I think unofficially a breakfast on a bridge. while the bridge pedal crew, to whom the riders had paid, I don't, whatever it is, $20 or something, to ride this event, was handing out water and bananas to each person that went by. We had a portable cook stove, and we were making waffles and pancakes there was a raid to a store beforehand, at least one time, for all kinds of stuff, nuts and berries and things. Bananas were going into the pancakes and waffles, and a berry, I hope to God it was huckleberries, I think it was. While the riders would go by the bridge pedal station, banana, thank you. They would do a double take at the breakfast on the bridges, or the bridge crashing shift setup, and just go, wow, and get in line. We had a line of people, I think sometimes like 30 people long. They waited forever while the other riders were going by. And thanked us profusely for, I don't know, there's a big variety, voodoo donuts, all kinds of snacks. There was actually hummus and things to put hummus in and salsa and things one time. And I haven't been involved in breakfast on the bridges all that much. So considering that I can think of several funny stories about breakfast on the bridges and I've only been involved sporadically, kind of tells you how zany and fun breakfast on the bridges actually is. I have a story of a heroic save. I was abandoned one time on breakfast on the bridges. I'd come late. I thought, well, I heard they needed help. I'll come and help. I ended up being there with all the stuff that I didn't bring, and I didn't have a way to move it anywhere. It was mugs and coffee containers and, you know, the whole setup. I didn't know there was a an axle breakage. which led to somebody not coming to get the stuff, although they worked heroically to fix the axle on the road, which I scolded on the list about it later when I thought that somebody had just forgotten about me. Among the bike community, you don't often wait for long before somebody swoops in to see what's going on and try to help. I'm up there. I'm not sure whether to leave the stuff and go find a way to get it or just stay there until hopefully somebody comes up because I don't think I had a cell phone with me at the time. So I'm just sort of, universe, you know, come get the stuff. Mark Ginsburg goes by. He's like, what's going on? I'm like, I'm stuck here with all this stuff. I don't have a way to move it. He said, wait. And he goes to an office where he works downtown, and there's a City of Portland bike trailers. There's like a small assortment of City of Portland bike trailers that are used for whatever they use them for. He grabbed one, put it on his bike. He comes and gets the stuff and takes it to his office to stash it until it can be picked up later by I don't know who. It just sort of saved the day. I was able to go to my job or whatever it was I had to do. I may or may not have been slacking at this time. Anyway, that's all I got. Thank you.
Hi, I'm Daniel Patrick Johnson. I use my middle name because Daniel Johnson is too anonymous. There's like thousands of us. I don't know about that. There's thousands of Daniel Johnsons. It took me a while to get involved in Breakfast on the Bridges. In 2006, I had 3 deaths in my family in short progression of each other, and the family got really worried about everyone's health. And at the time, I was really overweight, and I decided that I needed to make a change in my life. All these people, they were in such great shape, and they're having so much fun that I was like, okay, I need to get in on bikes in Portland because everyone looks amazing and they're having so much fun all the time. And so I got a job in Portland, and it took me a while before I actually moved to Portland, and I didn't get to Portland until late October, about this time. It might have actually this might actually be the anniversary of me moving to Portland 6 years ago. I biked to work my first day living in Portland, and it was freezing cold, and my friends, it was awful, and my friends, like, says, like, you're not allowed to bike home. They like, picked me up in a truck and, like, drove me home because they're like, you're going to die. It's freezing cold outside. And remember, I was, like, super out of shape at the time, and so just getting to work, it exhausted me. Our work had a deal with TriMet for an annual pass, and so they are having us keep track of, like, how much we use TriMet or biked or whatnot, because we somehow that affected our rates for TriMet. And so I had a good sense of, like, how much I was biking. I'd bike to work, and then I'd take the bus home, and then I'd take the bus for a few more days, and then I'd bike home. And so I'd bike back and forth to work, like, once a week, and then but I'd only bike home. I wouldn't try and go any extra distance to go, like, eat somewhere on the way home, because that's extra distance. And so I drove all the rest of the time when I wasn't biking to or from work. And it took me until, like, 3 months before I made it a whole week of biking every day. And when I started this job, I had to start at 6 a.m., and I was like, I knew that there, I wanted to, I came to Portland wanting to get involved in the bike community, and starting in October is not the best time to do that. And so I got on various internet channels and was like, how can I get involved? And they said, Breakfast on the Bridges, that happens every month. You can do it on your way to work. And I was like, well, I start work at 6 a.m. and Breakfast on the Bridges hasn't even started yet. But eventually they changed my schedule and I started going to Breakfast on the Bridges, because that was about the only regular thing I could go to in the winter. And that was where I made most of my first bikey friends. And now there's, like, two people in this room that I don't recognize. That was just my beginning, but it was like another year before I was actually volunteering. Bonnie was brewing coffee, and I came by and I picked it up in a trailer and brought it to the bridge. And I got the trailer from Ellie Blue. I bought it for her for like $22 or something. Yeah. Like, it was something where it was like I was like the fourth hand, and Ellie had bought it for like $23 or something. And so she's like, it's used. I used it, so I have to sell it for less money than I bought it for. So it's gonna be slightly less than I bought it for. Some funny stories as far as Breakfast on the Bridge. One of the ones that I remember was one day we had the idea that there's all these people who are biking by. And they're biking by because they waited until the last possible minute to go to work. And they literally did not have time to stop and grab a donut and then bike on. And so they're like, well, what if we handed the donut to them without them stopping? Someone held out a donut, and it was like, I think it was almost like the first biker who came by, like, grabbed the donut and stuck it in their mouth and kept biking. And they're just like,
this is the donut hand up. We decided that rather than making people stop, we would just hand them donuts as they backed by. It was great. It was awesome.
We
had a donut, and just like, you know, with the you know, carousel with the rings, you just grab the donut and keep on going.
And there's cheering every time, until one person, you know, this is like they got out of bed as late as possible, heading to work at the last moment. Was not a full mind when they reached out for their donut.
With two hands.
And they had good balance, but right at the end of the Hawthorne Bridge, you have to make a decision to turn right and go down to the waterfront, or veer to the left and go straight downtown. And right between those two is a giant thing of concrete.
And you went straight into that.
At which, so the moral of the story is, grab your donut with one hand, not two.
He was okay, brushed himself off, ate his donut, continued to work, but that was the end of that. And I believe in the last year, I witnessed someone was like, "Hey, let's hand off a donut to someone." I was like, "Wait a second, I've seen this before. It did not end as well as you imagine it would." You know, like, the first few will probably work, but at some point someone will be really tired and it won't work quite so well.
I'm Emily Wilson, and it took me a while to get involved with Breakfast on the Bridges. When Bike Summer was done in 2002, Ken and I actually continued the tradition of doing bicycle pub crawls. So I had gone to all the bicycle pub crawls during Bike Summer and continued those. But eventually what happened was I got a cookbook for vegan cupcakes and really wanted to get good at baking vegan cupcakes and didn't want to have to eat them all. So I struck on the solution of making cupcakes for Breakfast on the Bridges and getting other people to eat them for me. So if you are a baker and like to make things, this is an excellent opportunity to get good and not get fat. Other great memories come from, people have mentioned bridge pedal. Bridge pedal actually is a great way to do Breakfast on bridges you cannot normally access, like Markham and like the Fremont. So I have really great memories of doing Breakfast on the Bridges with Nick Pope and his griddle on the off-ramp of the Fremont Bridge, which was awesome. I remember Amy Stork actually doing Breakfast on the Bridges on Broadway and drinking a lot of coffee and going home and sending a lot of emails to the shift list. So she got a lot done after Breakfast on the Bridges, which could be you. I actually didn't get on the listserv for Breakfast on the Bridges until I was gone 1 month and had my friend Carrie By deliver cupcakes, and that was the month that Breakfast on the Bridges moved from Broadway to Steele. And Carrie By stood out on the Broadway and gave out cupcakes because she had no idea where Breakfast on the Bridges was that month. And after that, I was on the listserv, so I knew it was up. Other great memories. Roger Geller came by on a really, really cold morning. He had a mug of coffee in a bottle cage on his down tube, and it was leaking, and he actually had coffee icicles on his down tube, which is great.
It looked like his horse had peed.
Yeah. There are great volunteers right now. Liz on Steel bakes for us, and she is working on doing a marathon in all 50 states. So sometimes she's gone to run a marathon. And she will wear multiple layers of marathon gear and often run after people who are running the loop and be like, "Oh, I ran that marathon." And she, like, goes after them to talk to them about the marathon that they ran together at some point.
Even though this is retired, by the way.
Yeah, this is in her 60s.
Yep. And she's yep. fantastic.
Yep.
Very cool.
This is cool. And I'm currently looking for a gorilla suit to hand out bananas on Breakfast on the Bridges. After years of bringing cupcakes, I decided I should bring something that was a little more healthy. So now I bring bananas. So a bunny might work, but gorilla actually might be good too. So that's it. Thanks.
All right, and that wraps it up for the storytelling event, Breakfast on the Bridges, 10 years. Thank you so much, everyone, for making it happen. Many thanks to Steph Routh for capturing this audio. Thank you to Velo Cult in Hollywood District in Portland, Oregon, for hosting the event. And this has been the Sprocket Podcast. This is Brock Dittus wishing you the happiest of New Year's, and we will see you all after the clock turns over. The calendar pages are ripped off. We will be back next week with an interview with Joe Beal, from Microcosm Publishing and a longtime bicyclist in Portland, Oregon. He will give us some history and many other good things. The Sprocket Podcast can be found at thesprocketpodcast.com. Write to us at thesprocketpodcast@gmail.com, Twitter at Sprocket Podcast, and all the other good things. Should all acquaintance be forgot and ne'er be brought to mind? Should all acquaintance be forgot and days of auld lang syne? Here's me raising a toast to you this new year. Take care.